Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Annie Kagan, who is the author of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. It's often said that the fear of death may be one of our greatest fears, and one that we don't get to actually explore unless we have a near-death experience. But I found this book really enlightening as to how our concepts of death may not be exactly accurate. And this is at least one story that gives us a great deal of hope that suffering and other trials that we have on the earth plane may just be a bad dream. Thanks, Annie, for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Susan.
So, you want to tell our listening audience a little bit about you, your path, and how you were guided along this path to really tell this story?
Yes. Actually, this was a very surprising journey for me, Dr. Kolb. I had been a chiropractor in New York City. And after some time, I began to find that working with patients was becoming very stressful. And I decided to learn to meditate to try to remedy that situation. But there was a really interesting, unexpected side effect, which was I became super, super sensitized. And now going to work, actually, instead of becoming easier, became more difficult. I started getting headaches at work. And also the pace and the incredible sensory stimulation of New York City also began to become very difficult, and I felt this very, very strong need for solitude. And I decided to sell my practice, sell what I had, and move to a really small, very secluded house on the Long Island shore. I was pretty scared because I had no idea what was happening next. I had no idea that actually my life was setting the stage for an amazing adventure to come.
That's true. We don't know. And there's a lot of faith involved in making those great big steps. You invested a lot of time and money to become a chiropractor and to walk away from that.
And it was terrifying, as I'm sure you understand, Dr. Kolb.
I do.
Here I was. I meditated to make it better, and it actually got worse. So that's to say, we never really know how things are going to turn out.
Right. So you were also a lyricist. I mean, you wrote lyrics to songs, so you were involved in that during your solitude, right?
Yes. When I was very young, I started actually writing songs and lyrics. I did that till about my mid-20s. I was signed to Columbia Records. And what was really interesting that I found out recently that I also didn't understand from someone in this who's been in this field for a long time is that if I really look at my life, I've been working with energy and vibration my whole life because music mm-hmm. is invisible, it's vibratory. When I was a chiropractor, I actually did a lot of craniosacral therapy, which is very subtle work with the energy mm-hmm. of the cerebral spinal fluid. Then the meditation was all energy. So, and also as a lyricist, you mm-hmm. kind of, I was always in love with words. And in a song, you have to, use the least amount of words to the most effect. So that also helped me write, my part of the book, because the book is a conversation. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it all makes sense looking backwards.
And also, I wrote lyrics as well, and in fact, I wrote lyrics that were used in records, and it's one of my great loves, too.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, and lyrics and music in general require one to go into a higher level to bring them back in. I mean, that's what you do. You basically elevate your vibration to the point where you can hear. Now, some people, like, you know, Mozart or Beethoven, can hear, you know, incredibly complex things, where you and I may not hear that kind of complexity, but or have the talent to bring it back in, you know, at the level they're bringing it back in. But it's still the same thing. You go up, you listen, and then you bring it back.
That's absolutely true, and it's also true in singing. That something that I learned about singing, because I did a lot of studio work, and really, to hit the note well, you hear the silent note in your mind, or in your expanded mind, before you produce it. So there's a lot of listening involved in music.
There is. So these were all to, I guess, hone your talents in keeping your consciousness tuned to a particular vibratory level, because there's many different levels that we can listen at. And
there's many different levels, and really, when I listen to Billy, it's like tuning in with a radio to a different vibration. And even now, at the beginning when I heard him speaking, it was quite loud, because he was on the what we'll call it, a lower level. He was closer to the earth.
Right.
But now that he's very, very far away, it's like listening. It's like first you almost hear like silence. You like listen to the silence, and then the words blossom out of that silence. It's kind of a difficult thing to explain.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, you have to focus your attention very much with one-pointedness, I would say, and not waver in any direction, and then wait. And then slowly the words come in, and sometimes, I don't know whether you get this, but I get this, the words will repeat themselves, because you don't want to tune into the wrong thing. So you focus, and then you hear the words, and then if it's correct, you hear them again, and then you start. And it just flows through you. It really flows through you. The information coming through is information you couldn't possibly be making up, because you don't know it. That's how you know you're actually having a conversation with a non-bodied entity. Okay,
that is so true. And you know, when it comes to focus, when I was working with a producer who was my mentor. His name was Brian Keene. He's a Grammy and Emmy-winning producer, and I learned so much from him. He always said focus is the most important thing. And also, yes, when you receive information, and I'm calling it now evidentiary after-death communications, because it is an after-death communication with my brother. Time and time again, Billy gave me information that I couldn't possibly know. And some of it involved other people. He gave me information about them that I didn't know, and so I could really check it out. Information about pieces of music that I didn't know. Languages, words from ancient languages that I didn't know. And every time, they proved to be correct, and if that hadn't happened, there's no way I ever would have published this book.
Right. Well, we have something in common. The energies that communicate with me will also often have me Google something. I mean, very, very, very common, yeah. When Michael Jackson died, they had me Google this set of words that took me to article in the Journal of Eating Disorders. And in that article, it was a case study of someone who had over-exercised and had a high potassium level, had been in a lot of pain, and then died with a slow heart rate. And then they told me that that is how Michael Jackson died. He didn't die of the other overdose, the Diprivan overdose, because he'd been doing that for years.
Yes.
And so, in fact, the minute he died, my supervisor, you know, my front desk supervisor, told me he had died because I had been in communication with Michael by email for about 2 years.
Wow.
One of my secretaries was really good friends with him, and so I actually wrote a paper called A Tribute to Michael Jackson, where I outline everything, and it's on the internet if anybody wants to read it. But the minute she told me he died, I heard the doctor will be blamed. Very interesting. And then,
it is interesting.
Yeah, and then I was told to Google the set of words. I don't remember what they are now, but they took me to this one article. And then his brother said that Michael had called him and said he was in horrible pain. And then somebody else in an interview, it was a nurse, said that she made him a nutritional drink. And you probably know nutritional drinks are very, very high in potassium.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
well, that wasn't
you,
what he needed.
Right. And when you sweat
right.
a lot, people don't understand
yeah.
that your electrolytes change. Actually, it's very familiar to me because it happened to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think the underlying phenomenon that you're speaking about is that, you know, you're given information, and in a way, the information when you're given it. It makes no sense to you whatsoever until you Google it.
Right. And then when you watch, I was watching Larry King Live, and people were saying he died with a slow heart rate. You see, there were observers that matched everything in this article. And of
yeah.
course, I mean, Michael was anorexic. I mean, if you read his autopsies, they say an anorexic white male, you know. So, you know, perhaps the doctor should have known that he was anorexic and been watching out for this, maybe by doing blood tests. But the idea, so, you know, he's not totally off the hook. You know, I wouldn't let him off the hook completely
right.
for that if Michael was his only charge. But he did not die of a Diprovan overdose, according to the information that I got through the same means that you were talking to Billy with.
Right, and it's just so interesting when you're given a phrase that really doesn't mean
anything
to
you.
And then
right.
it leads you. I remember there's
right.
one point in the book where, you know, at the beginning of the book, there are three sections to the book, in the first section and the second section. And then in the third section, in Billy's third phase, things really change a lot, and he goes through a lot of
mm-hmm.
activity, and he goes through different realms, and a lot happens to him. And when
mm-hmm.
he began telling me this part of the book, I was thinking in my mind, even though he was talking really fast, and I knew it couldn't
mm-hmm.
be me, because when I write my part, it's really slow. I labor
oh, right.
over everything
yeah.
I write.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
how is this sentence? Maybe I should redo it.
Yeah.
But he's talking like lightning fast. I could hardly keep
right.
up with him. But I'm still thinking in my mind, because it's so fantastic what he's saying, that I got to be making this up. This
right.
can't really be.
This can't be real. Yeah.
And then he says the word that, you know, the entity he's talking about, their name is Shvara.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stops, and I Google Shvara. And to my amazement, there really is such an entity,
mm-hmm.
and it's exactly as he's describing it. You know, she's
right.
an ultimate goddess. And when something like that happens, your whole world stops.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a chill from the top of your head to the bottom of your foot. And everything that you've ever believed kind of goes away. And you know that you're really getting this communication from another level, because there's no way you could have made this up.
Right.
And so, you know, right? And so it just takes you out of, like, your human mind into this
mm-hmm.
expanded consciousness. And every time it happened, I would be amazed and say to myself, this is really true. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm really communicating with another level. I'm really communicating with my dead brother. And he's giving me this incredible information. And although I really was very reluctant to share it with the world, because, of course, I knew I was exposing myself to, you know, ridicule or whatever, I knew that it was beyond me and that I really didn't have the right to keep it to myself.
No, in fact, your job is very important, because we are now approaching a time when I think almost everybody will be given an opportunity to understand that these higher worlds are real, you know, either through a personal experience or a book like yours or, you know, whatever, whatever is the best route for them. And I think these messages are very, very important right now.
Oh, thank you. And also what I love, what is very thrilling to me is, of course, you know, I'm in my room typing away what Billy's saying, and I'm having experiences from what he's sharing with me. And now I have something like 43,000 people in a couple of months on Billy's Facebook page, on the book Facebook page,
right.
And they're saying, am I crazy? Because, you know, I'm reading this and I'm having an experience of Billy and I feel like I'm going with him and I'm learning, you know. So there's something about the way the book is written, not really my part of it because it's a conversation, but Billy's part that actually takes people into the experience of light, and they come back different, and then they read it over and over again, and and each time it's a different experience. So for me, that's amazingly thrilling.
Well, let's back up a little bit and tell the listening audience about your relationship with Billy. You obviously his sister, but tell him a little bit about the little conflicted relationship that you had and why it was conflicted.
Well, Billy, the subtitle to the book is How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. And Billy was always the bad boy, the older bad boy, kind of a James Dean type. And I was always the good girl, the good student. I played by the rules. And Billy, although he had a problem with drugs and alcohol addiction, one or the other, many different times in his life. There were times when he was also sober. He actually was a very intense lover of life, and people loved him. I mean, I have to say he was a lot more popular than I was, and he loved helping people. And there was a lot of conflict, though, between us, because in our family, I was always the little angel, and he was the troublemaker. And therefore, you know, it set up, although I worshipped my older brother because he was so charismatic, he didn't feel the same about me because he was always being compared to me, and he was always on the losing side. So a lot of those issues have been worked out now that, you know, he's on the other side of things. But, it, you know, and that's a nice thing for people to know, too, is that, you know, when somebody passes on to the other side, it's only the love that's remembered. It's really interesting. I think that's really important. I got a wonderful email from a lovely woman whose husband was sick for a very, very long time, years, maybe 10 years, I don't know how long exactly. And she loved him dearly, but his dying process was very, very difficult. And as some people may know and some people may not know, that when you're the caretaker over a long period of time, it's very, very hard. And she wrote to me saying, you know, I loved him so much, but at the end, I was so grouchy, and I hope I didn't hurt him, and I hope, you know, he understands now. And the truth is, they totally understand, because all they know is the love. And there's one point in the book where, you know, because Billy died addicted to drugs, And although I tried to help him, I couldn't help him. And during the last years of his life, I wasn't even in communication with him because really his problems started to make me ill and there was a lot of conflict between them. And after he died, I had so much guilt. And, you know, when people die that we try to help, we have a guilt. Like, oh, if I only had done this, maybe he would still be here. And there's one point in the book where he's giving me this beautiful blessing. And as he's giving me this blessing, you know, from the other side, I'm sitting there weeping because I'm so guilty. And he said to me, you know, I could tell, I could read your mind, and I know that you're feeling like, do I forgive you? And maybe the real question is, do you forgive me? Because really, he had made my life really difficult. Mm-hmm. And then he said, but, you know, the honest truth is, there is no forgiveness that's necessary because whatever we do in life, we've signed up to do this dance together. We agreed before we were born to go through these things together. So it's not this human concept of forgiveness because all there is that's left is love.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So how did you want to talk to the audience a little bit about how Billy first contacted you?
Yes. Billy was actually killed by being hit by a car in the middle of the night as he was running across a highway. He was like running from a hospital where he wanted to be admitted, but they would only admit him to detox. And he was hit by a car. And the police called me the next day, and I thought, oh, my God, the police are calling me. He must be in jail. But actually, they told me he had died. And I was so grief-stricken, I could barely get out of bed for weeks. And one morning at sunrise, just as I was waking up, I heard Billy's voice. He had a very distinctive, beautiful, deep, mellow voice calling my name. Like, as if there was a hole in the ceiling, and he was saying, Annie, get up, it's me, Annie. And at first, I thought I was dreaming that, oh, I said, like, Billy, you're dead, you can't be here, I'm dreaming. And he said, no, get up, get a notebook and write what I'm saying. And now as I'm up and walking across the floor, I'm realizing, well, I'm up, and he's still talking to me.
Yeah.
And he, the first thing he did was assure me that he was fine, that he was floating through a beautiful divine universe. The lights were healing him. There were invisible beings all around him, and that death really wasn't as serious as we thought it was. And in his bad boy way, he said, you know, death is really enjoyable. So far, it couldn't be better. And I promise you that, you know, we will be meeting again. And that was the first of many, many visits.
So do you want to explain a little bit about how there was kind of a, well, you did explain a little bit about how he gave you things that related to other people, that when you call them were true. He kept giving you things to indicate that he wasn't just a voice in your head that you were making up.
Yeah, because at first I was extremely skeptical. I thought maybe that grief had somehow made me go a little crazy. Maybe it pushed me over the edge and I was imagining things. Mm-hmm. And he knew that I felt that way. And he told me, I think it was the second time that he came, that he was going to prove to me that he wasn't just my imagination, that this was really happening. And he didn't tell me how he was going to do it. And I think the very first thing that happened was he told me on the second visit that he wanted me to get some things that were that he had in his car. Now, again, I hadn't spoken to him in months. I didn't even know that he had a car. And I said to him, God, Billy, how am I supposed to find your car? Like, in Florida? Like, and then he told me to go look in his wallet that I now had because the police had sent it to me. Mm-hmm. And I looked through all the business cards, and then I came to one from a Mercedes dealer, and he said, mm-hmm. bingo. And I called the number on the card, and I explained who I was, that I was Billy's sister, and I almost fell down when they told me that actually they did have Billy's car, mm-hmm. and that they would pack up everything that was in the car and send it to me. And when I got off the phone, I just couldn't believe that either I had become psychic or Billy was really talking to me. And that was just the first of many incidents of this kind that made me know that Billy was real.
Yeah, the informational stuff is often what's used to prove that you are talking to somebody beyond the beyond our world. But there was actually an experiment done. I don't know if you've ever heard of this experiment, where they used a skill instead. Have you ever heard of the experiment they did in the 1980s where they had a psychic contact a chess grandmaster in the afterlife, and then through the psychic, that chess grandmaster played a current living grandmaster?
Wow, that is so phenomenal.
Yeah, and they went 60 moves until the Hungarian, who was in spirit, the prior grandmaster, lost. And he said that, he hadn't played chess in a while. He'd been dead. But but he said that he did this because he wanted to have people understand who were living that there is life after death, and that it's actually quite a complex life after death. It's not just one place like heaven, like we're taught in Bible school. So one more thing, and then I'll let you comment on that, because I'm sure it's amazing. But this was told to me on a radio show by Russell Targ, who is the physicist in charge of the remote viewing for the military at one point. So his brother-in-law was Bobby Fischer. And he said Bobby looked at the 60 moves and said only a chess grandmaster could have done that.
That is absolutely incredible.
Isn't that a great story?
It's a great story. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when the Tibetans go in search of who's the reincarnation of the Karmapa or the Dalai Lama, where, the person identifies things and knows things that prove that person, but I've never heard of like channeling a skill. That is incredible.
A skill, they designed this experiment specifically to test skill rather than knowledge, because the debunkers would say, there's all these really amazing ways you could have that knowledge, but a skill is very, very difficult to somehow gain, especially for the psychic, because the psychic didn't even play chess.
Wow.
There's no way he could have played at a grandmaster level.
So, wow, I really want to look
into
that.
Read the article. It's published. Yeah, it's published. The exact reference, I actually wrote about it. I wrote a chapter in a book called Optimism, and it's a compilation work of many different authors. But in my chapter, the exact reference is made. But I can email it to you.
Oh, please. That is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah,
that is spectacular.
It's probably the best proof we have of life after death.
Yeah, but no one can dispute that.
Right.
Actually,
but,
everyone could dispute everything because they love so.
No reasonable, logical person could dispute it. And let's put it that way.
Right.
But your book goes into another concept that I think is very important, and that is, after you get over the whole thing about believing it's really your brother and believing that, you know, you're not going crazy and believing that, you know, he actually is probably assigned to do this. This is probably part of, you know, a bigger project. His life was the way it was, and your relationship was set up so that this book could be written. Once you gather all that information, he's showing us that there's different levels that we go through as we drop different aspects of ourself as we go further and further into probably higher and higher vibratory levels. And that's the thing that fascinated me about the book, is he's actually a teacher of this.
He is, and I would say that for me that was the most surprising aspect, how much we change and how vast and complex and active really the other side is. It's not some static
mm-hmm.
place. And
no.
I would say that, you know, how much we transform and how many births and deaths, and that I would really call it kind of an evolutionary journey of the soul.
Exactly.
And what I find so beautiful is as he goes through the many different realms, and they're described in great detail, there
mm-hmm.
are beings there, and one of the things that the beings do is they give you true unconditional love. And
mm-hmm.
that unconditional love actually makes you evolve into a higher being yourself. Like he said, you know, what's amazing is that there's one point he says, you know, I now love myself in a way that I never could have when I first got to the afterlife. So I guess that means that even the soul changes.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. The soul goes through many levels and many changes and goes to a higher frequency. It's fascinating. It's just a fascinating adventure. And I think that is very unique about what Billy teaches. I think something that that when people have NDEs, they kind of go to the in the near death experience, you just go to the kind of the entryway.
Right.
The entryway where there's light, you might meet, you know, certain beings, you're bathed in the incredible feeling of unconditional love, which, by the way, you know, on Earth we talk about unconditional love, but it's not really, it's just a very, very dim reflection of the real unconditional love
mm-hmm.
in the world of the divine. And Billy goes much, much deeper into the realms of change and what really happens to us as we go on. And one question that I get often or something that people ask about is, you know, because most people, they want to meet their loved ones. And you
mm-hmm.
do when you first go to the afterlife, you do. You meet your loved ones, you meet your pets, you know, it's kind of mimics your idyllic view of what would happen because you need
mm-hmm.
to get used to that atmosphere. But as Billy goes on and he goes into the light, he goes on to meet other beings that are familiar to him that he may not have known in life. But you get to
mm-hmm.
meet like your soul family. You get to meet your soul tribe. And that's just an exquisite feeling of being home, and you feel like, you know, this is really your home.
Right. It's true.
And then people say, well, then, you know, well, why would you be on Earth? Because Earth is a completely different kind of experience. And the other thing is, as Billy takes you along into the realms, he also gives wonderful wisdom and advice about how to have a better life on Earth. It's, you know, that how to realize while you're here on Earth that you already are an eternal being, and all the things that you take so seriously may not be quite as serious as you think. I mean, he's taught me so many things about life that have made my life a lot better.
Yeah, that's a very important part of the book. And also just the part where we started out, where there really is nothing to fear about death. That's a very important message in the book.
It is, because death is a doorway, and people suffer so much around the experience of death. And if you really, really know, number one, that it's not some fairy tale that, you know, you are going to meet your loved ones again, that you really, really are. It's not just made up. You know, Joseph Campbell said something really, really interesting. He said that from the beginning of time, throughout the entire world, people have a belief in the afterlife. So why is that? And, you know, in ancient times, we didn't have so many near-death experiences, because that's because of modern medical breakthroughs. We have a lot more near-death experiences now than in the past. And in the past, it was more after-death communications. People really communicated and communed with their ancestors, which is kind of frowned upon a little bit in our society. Like, a lot of people on Facebook confide that, you know, they can't really tell people, or if they tell people, they make fun of them, and it's such a sacred experience that you don't really want to have it ruined. But Joseph Campbell said, you know, if this is in every culture, there has to be truth to it.
Right. Yeah, and the I think that in where a lot of our ancestors reside, they can see across time. And so if you're going to be going into a dangerous situation, I think they feel they have a duty to come back and warn you about it if they can.
If they can.
And so they come back. If they can, they come back, and what my personal experience is, they come back to tell me something that I need to hear. I don't always listen, by the way. I won't say that. But every time they tell me that there's danger ahead, there is danger ahead. So I think they come back to warn me.
That's very true in many cases. The other week, I think it was just last week, I heard an amazing story from someone who actually read my book. Of course, he never told me this story before. And he said when he was very young, his mother died. His father wasn't around. He had no help, really. And he got into a lot of trouble, and he was in a gang. And one day he was about to go into, and he was very close with his mother before she died. I think he died when he was 13 or 14, and he was about to go into a building, and he heard his mother say, "Don't go in, don't go there." And he was going to go in again, and she said, "Don't go into that building." And he didn't. And minutes later, the building was fired on by, like, machine guns, and everybody died.
Right.
And this is real. I mean, I could tell when he was telling me this. This was totally real, and it changed his
whole
life.
Good thing he listened. Yeah, really.
It's a good thing he listened, yeah. I mean,
really.
It had to do with, you know, it wasn't the first time he felt her presence, actually. He felt her presence before, but this was the first time that he actually heard her. And I can't say why it happens with some people and not with others. Like in the book, Billy warns me that although my husband had gone to many doctors who had told him he was just fine, Billy warned me that he wasn't just fine. And I had him go to another doctor and yet another doctor and yet another doctor, and it turned out that he actually needed open heart surgery right away, and had Billy not warned us, he could have died.
Right.
So I had that experience myself, and maybe if we all tried as they did in old times, in ancient times, to really kind of connect with our ancestors, possibly they would be able to help us more. Like, I know that in the East, and this is my experience of Billy, in the East they believe that when somebody goes into the next life, which is a beautiful divine place, they have powers that they didn't have when they were alive. And certainly Billy, who died, you know, addicted and homeless, certainly is, as soon as he died, he evolved into a much wiser and different being.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to realize that even though you might not have had the most terrific connection with that person while they were alive, to be open to that change, that the relationship could change and that the person can change. And I think that's one of the very comforting parts of Billy's message, is that, and I think, Dr. Kolb, you were talking about this before, that no matter what struggles you have on Earth, those struggles could actually be helping you to evolve. They're important lessons that you're learning while you're here, and not to be ashamed of them, and not to judge yourself because of them.
And also not to judge other people. I've noticed in my life experience that many addicts are actually very evolved beings. I believe that the addiction is a kind of a dark spell that they fall under, that's very, very difficult to get out from under. I mean, you know, maybe you and I who haven't experienced it cannot really appreciate how much they struggle with it, unless, like, you saw Billy struggle with it. So when somebody falls under that, we shouldn't condemn them. We should understand that their spiritual tests may be much more difficult than our spiritual tests are.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And one of the things that he says, which I think is so wise, is, you know, we think we could all identify with other people, but it's only to some extent, because in a way, you can never totally walk in somebody else's shoes. Not really. You don't know what their soul came here to do. You don't know, you know, you don't know. I don't really know what it's like to have a drug addiction and how difficult it is. And, you know, that it could be genetic, and it's kind of a nervous system disorder, the way that Billy describes it. Like, once somebody who has those tendencies does fall under the spell, it's very, very, very hard. And also, I think that there's so much shame about it in our society, and hopefully we will stop judging people so harshly.
Yeah, it has to do with dopamine in the brain. That's very true. People who are thrill seekers tend to be more likely to become addicted.
Yes. Oh, and I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah, there's neurological neurotransmitters kicking in, and perhaps if we had a different view of it, we could help people more. You know, it was really weird because in Billy's last years, actually, after Billy died, I called his drug counselor, and he said to me, "Oh, yeah, well, you know, what a shame. Billy died because he just didn't trust his higher power." And nothing could have been further than the truth, because one of the searches that Billy sent me on was, I found in that car there were diaries that he had written in the very last days of his life. And mm-hmm. when you read them, and some of them are in the book, it shows that he was that actually God was the only thing that mattered to him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, to judge someone and say, well, you're failing because you're just not tapping into God or your own higher powers. You know, that's done mm-hmm. sometimes today, even with people who are ill. There's this assumption that everybody could just cure themselves if they just change the way they think. And I know as a doctor, and you as a doctor also, that illness is also a mysterious thing.
Well, and I believe that we have a time where we're supposed to go. I mean, it's, you know, we have to die of something, and be it cancer or running out in front of a truck or, you know, having a medical malpractice kill you, you know.
Yes.
It's all, I believe that from what we know about the great Rishi Masters and how they predicted everything down to the last thing, including your death date, I believe that we all have an expiration date. And yes, you can, under certain circumstances, extend it. I mean, their contracts can be rewritten, just like contracts here on Earth. But, you know, in general, you're here for a time, because obviously what happened to Billy on the other side is also part of a greater plan for his soul. So
absolutely.
We're not meant to be down here forever, so therefore we have to die, right? Okay, so we have to die of something. Okay. And some of the information is interesting that we got in session. We had I don't know whether you heard about it here, but there was a busload of basketball players that were coming back or going to a game, and the bus driver mistook a exit as part of the road, and then came up and then went over, the bus went over the railing and then crashed back onto the highway
mm-hmm.
in the middle of the night. And so we were asking about that, because that was obviously a very interesting way to die. I mean, so not everybody died in the bus, but some people did.
Uh-huh.
And the information we were given is that, yeah, we've come back so many times that we try to look for really interesting ways to die. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. And, you know, Raymond Moody, the great Raymond Moody, the father of the
uh-huh.
NDE, the author of Life
yeah,
After
I know
Life.
Raymond.
You
yeah.
know Raymond, right? And
he's been here in the center doing noetic science, because he lives close to here.
Oh, well, so
I know him personally.
Oh, I just think he's so wonderful. And, you know, he wrote
mm-hmm.
the foreword to my book. And we were talking
yeah.
about, you know, the suffering on Earth. And Raymond, you know, it's hard for people to understand, but people who have done research for years and years and years, they lose their fear of death. And they also
mm-hmm.
lose some of their fear of suffering, because when you know
right.
that you're eternal, you know, this suffering is more temporary. And Raymond was saying, well, if I'm going to have 1,000 lives, I want one of it to be, you know, a starving child. I want to taste all the experiences on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's really hard for us to understand, because, of course, we prefer pleasure over pain. But the soul
mm-hmm.
just longs for experience and different kinds
right.
of experience. So I, you know, that harmonizes with what you just said about the.
And I can
yeah.
tell you, every individual who starved to death, because if you go out to dinner with them, if they don't finish their meal, they'll take it home with them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's true. They won't waste food.
That's,
yes.
That's
you
so
see, so qualities come out of suffering that are good qualities.
Absolutely.
You don't waste things, which is always
absolutely.
A good quality. Yeah.
And also, I think that there is, this is what one of the things that I've gotten out of it. There are times of deep difficulty, not just normal difficulty, but
mm-hmm.
times where really there's so much difficulty and you don't know what the answer is. You don't know how to deal with the situation. It's very complex, and no matter how many people you ask, they can't give you the answer. There is no one answer. In those times, although it's great hardship, we become wise, because you have to become wise in order to deal with the situation, and you have to really depend on your own resources. And that is tremendous spiritual growth, even though it's very, very uncomfortable.
It's true. We don't necessarily grow quickly unless we have to reach deep inside. And
yes,
if things
and then,
are going well, we don't reach deep inside. We, you know, go to a movie or go do something we want to do.
Yeah, and that's wonderful too. When I have those days where, like today, it's beautiful and there's a light breeze and the sky is blue and, you know, I could go walk by the water, I'm so grateful for that contrasting experience, and I get all the joy from it. And then but one of the things that Billy's taught me, and I think for me this was so important, the good girl, is that, you know, you can't have the sea without storms here. You can't have the wind without tornadoes. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay when the shadow comes. It doesn't mean that I have to wait for everything to be perfect to really live and enjoy my life. I can accept the shadow part of this dimension much more easily than I could in the past.
Right. Well, we live in a world of polarity, so you can experience cold without experience heat. And every single thing that is in polar opposite, and almost everything is on the planet, you can't have one without the other. So you would say that this experience we're in is one to experience polarity.
Because that's right.
You would have to agree that where Billy is, there doesn't seem to be polarity.
There isn't. And I think something that I don't think it made it into the book, because not all the notes made it into the book, but when
right.
Billy was alive, I think it was a poem by Gibran. He loves Gibran, and there's a place where Gibran said, you know, your pain carves out the room for your joy, something like that. I'm paraphrasing.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy said, well, you know, it's not like that in this dimension, and I could tell you I don't really miss the pain.
Right.
You know, I don't miss one single molecule. It's just fine on this on this side. But here where we are, it's just part of life. And Billy's always telling me, enjoy yourself as much as you can anyway.
Right. That's very true. Well, tell our listening audience a little bit about your website and where they can get the book.
Okay. The website is afterlifeofbillyfingers.com. You can download a free chapter there. And please go to Facebook, also Afterlife of Billy Fingers on Facebook. It's a wonderful community with all the wisdom. And you can purchase at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, and the publisher is Hampton Roads. You could order from any bookstore.
Great. And what are your plans from here on out? Do you know yet?
I think there will sometime in the future be another book. I think there may be a beautiful meditation CD coming sometime in the future. I think that's in the works.
Well, great. Do you have any last minute advice for our listening audience that came out of the wisdom that Billy has taught you?
Yes. One of my favorites is that you are literally made of stars. Every cell in your body was forged on a star, and the same intelligence that runs the universe is available to you. And when you imagine the infinite, You're touched by your infinite self.
That's great. Well,
what
thank
a pleasure
you very much.
To be here with you, Dr. Cole.
Well, thank you.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed you.
Well, I enjoyed you too. It's been a great adventure learning about what Billy went through in the afterlife. It's just really wonderful and wonderful to connect with you as well.
Thank you so much.
Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Annie Kagan, the author of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. It's much more than just a life after death story, though. It teaches us a lot of what the afterlife really is, the different levels. And I'm hopeful that Billy will come back to explain more, because there is a great deal to explain about everything that we need to know. Next week, we have Tina Zion, Become a Medical Intuitive, The Complete Developmental Course. On the 20th, Evan Slauson, Sanctuary, The Path to Consciousness. And the Noetic Science Meeting is on the 18th of July. Vicki Dean will be presenting vocal imaging. This is a voice technique to analyze your physical body, including toxicities. It's very interesting. And then Cindy Stockton, our esthetician, will be giving a free lecture on the benefits of massage therapy on the 23rd. So this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.